Today is March 10th, 2017, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio in Washington. Coming up, trying to fix the healthcare system in the United States as Republicans split on how to do it.
We have to admit we are divided on replacement. We are united on repeal, but we are divided on replacement.
Also ahead, South Korea's president is impeached. We'll talk with VOA's Asia in a minute, Steve Miller, to explain what lies ahead for the country. And the Islamic State group is adapting new strategies in Afghanistan. Aisha Tanzim reports from Islamabad. And air pollution masks for kids. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, from the beginning of his presidency, Donald Trump has vowed to follow through on the campaign pledges that he made last year and deliver on the promises made to the voters who put him in the White House. But growing differences among congressional Republicans now threatens to complicate Trump's ability to bring real change to Washington, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
For Donald Trump, it's all about results, and that includes health care reform.
I think we're going to have a tremendous success. It's a complicated process, but actually it's very simple. It's called good health care.
Good morning, everybody.
But Republicans are deeply split over undoing and replacing President Barack Obama's health care law, including Kentucky Senator Rand Paul.
We have to admit we are divided on replacement. We are united on repeal, but we are divided on replacement.
House Speaker Paul Ryan says Republicans must adjust to the reality of controlling both Congress and the White House.
I think what you're seeing is we're going through the inevitable growing pains of being an opposition party to becoming a governing party.
Republican divisions have also emerged over the probe into Russian meddling in last year's U.S. election. Senator Lindsey Graham wants to be aggressive.
I'm not only going to push for a Russian investigation, I'm going to punish Russia for trying to interfere in our election.
But House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes favors a more cautious approach.
I know there's a tendency for you all to believe that there's some grand conspiracy here that the Russians, helped elect Donald Trump. And, look, we have an investigation going on that, and we're not going to prejudge anything.
Trump's overall public approval rating remains low, but his core supporters like what he's doing. Growing Republican divisions could hamper the president, says Republican strategist John Feary.
He is keeping faith with his campaign promises. He said he was going to appoint a conservative Supreme Court justice. He said he was going to be very vigilant on immigration. He said he was going to do something to keep terrorists from coming into the country.
At the same time, Trump's preoccupation with pleasing his base could be a problem down the road, says John Fortier.
But he has kept his base. Does he need a little bit more than that? Yes. If he were to run an election, the midterm, or run again for office in 4 years with the level of support he has, it would not go well for him.
For now, Trump hopes to recapture the momentum from his recent address to Congress, which got positive reviews from Republicans and even a few Democrats. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
On to now to our social media segment with Andrew Pacheski, and a couple of things hitting the social media line, people hitting up having a lot to say about what's going on with Julian Assange and some of the latest things that he has said. What's up with that?
Yeah, it's a name well known to many, of course, the founder of WikiLeaks. And Julian Assange set off social media earlier this week when he announced that WikiLeaks had obtained information about the Central Intelligence Agency having the ability to spy on people through phones, computers, televisions, and other smart devices. Now he's announced that with that information, he's going to be providing it to tech firms before it's released to the general public, specifically citing companies like Apple, Google, and Samsung. The idea being that these tech companies can then use this information to develop ways to subvert these tactics. So it's a lot of questions on social media about how exactly that's going to work, if there's any laws that are going to be broken. I mean, already WikiLeaks has done things that have been questionable. And that's also setting up kind of a debate on social media. Do you work with a man, if you're a tech company, who has been seen as a spy, as a traitor, as an ally of Vladimir Putin? Or do you try to trust the secret of U.S. spy agencies and assume that they're not doing anything that could be potentially damaging to your customers? So it does set up this kind of awkward dichotomy on social media. What do these tech companies do? And then also a lot of concern from the consumers, people wondering, is my TV going to get hacked? Are they going to spy on me through my phone? So still a lot of questions to be answered.
And how do you know how they hack through, say, your television set? What do they do?
You know, Julian Assange knows that information, and he's the keeper of that for now. I have no doubt that in the coming days and weeks we'll get maybe a little more insight into that, but for now he's the gatekeeper.
Okay, and so then there was something kind of interesting on, what was it, YouTube, a video of some sort. What's going on with this? Tell us what was the video.
You know, sometimes we have these kind of viral video moments that spread across social media, and that was the case for Professor Robert Kelly giving an interview to the BBC about the impeachment of South Korea's president, sitting in, it looks like, his office at home over Skype. When you see in the background, the door opens and his two young children toddle in. And the presenter in BBC says, it looks like your children have come in there. So you see them enter the frame. Seconds later, his wife runs in, grabs the kids, tries to frantically get them out of the room. Well, this is spread all over social media. People saying it's hilarious. It made them smile. saying his kids are really cute because it looked like they were trying to do a little dance in the background. And a lot of credit to Robert Kelly for keeping his cool, but even more credit to his wife, their mom, who is the real hero, they said, for thinking so quickly to grab them and get them out of there.
Oh, my goodness. That must have been pretty funny. So, I mean, how many hits is that getting? Do you know?
Oh, gosh. You know what? It's spread all over the place. I've seen it on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitter. It's
everywhere.
Ubiquitous. So we'll see how long that goes on and if maybe they get any talk show appearances or things like that out of this. But in the meantime, a nice way to end Friday on a cute note.
Of course, the kid's got some fleeting fame there, right?
Perhaps.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Andrew Podcheski, our online expert. You're listening to International Edition. Well, among the top stories in the world, European leaders today were divided over the idea of accepting a multi-speed Europe, threatening to deepen tensions at a Brussels summit later this month. For the second time this year, the United States has deported a group of Somali immigrants to their home country. Nigeria's president is back home after weeks of medical care abroad, but he says the vice president will continue running the country's affairs for the time being. And Russian President Vladimir Putin says Russian-Turkish relations are getting stronger as the two countries seek ways to reduce the scale of fighting in the six-year Syrian conflict. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, the Islamic State militant group claimed this week's devastating attack on a hospital in Kabul that killed at least 30 people. VOA's Aisha Tanzim explores what this attack shows about ISIS's changing tactics and the capabilities in Afghanistan.
The attack in Kabul this week was different from Islamic State assaults in the past. Previous attacks were simpler, mostly on large gatherings of people that made easy targets for a suicide bombing. This week's attack required more complex reconnaissance and pre-planning, according to Barnett Rubin, who joined us via Skype from New York.
This was a sophisticated intelligence-driven attack. It shows that they were able to reconnoiter the hospital very well, to figure out how to get into it, to smuggle all of the explosive material into Kabul, to be able to set up, have a safe house where they could set up everything. They obtained the proper clothing in order to disguise themselves as doctors and so on.
The attack also shows that IS has support networks inside Kabul, which means they must have succeeded at least somewhat in their recruitment efforts. Most Afghans reject IS methodology as too cruel and alien to their culture. But high unemployment and lucrative salary offers are a significant draw for former fighters without jobs, says Intizar Khadim, who joined us via Skype from Kabul.
In Middle East, you see that Daesh is giving food for war. In Afghanistan, they're paying high prices for any warriors that are joining this group. They're paying high wages for their fighters who are grabbing guns and fighting for them.
The group's messaging through social media and an FM station in eastern provinces also helps with recruitment. American military commanders insist IS has lost territory and fighters as a result of NATO and Afghan operations. But analysts say they seem to have adapted and changed their strategy. The other side, the threat of IS may be leading regional players like Russia, Iran and others to get the Taliban on board for a political settlement. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Islamabad.
Well, the unanimous ruling removing Park Geun-hye was handed down by the court Friday to protesters dying in demonstrations that erupted outside the court building. The acting chief justice read the ruling live on national television, saying the South Korean president, her acts of violating the Constitution and law are a betrayal of the public trust. Now, the court cited as grave violations of the Constitution the allegations that Park colluded with her longtime friend, Choi Soon-sil, to extort Korean conglomerates to donate more than $69 million to two dubious foundations. But Park has been repeatedly denying the charges against her. But anyway, VOA Asia in a Minute host Steve Miller is joining us now to talk about the impeachment. And Steve, I think the first thing going through a lot of people's minds now is that now that she's been impeached, what's next for the for South Korea?
That's a great question. And this is actually the first time that a president has been impeached in South Korea. So according to the South Korean Constitution, the acting president, who is the prime minister, Hwang Kyo-an, will remain in that post until the next president is chosen. Now, by the Constitution, an election must be held in South Korea within 60 days. So we're looking around the May 8th, May 9th timeframe for that election to take place and the next president to take office.
Now, she was the first female president for that country.
She was the first female president.
A lot of protesting going on. And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so first female president, the daughter of a former military leader, Park Chung-hee, who was a dictator for several years before his assassination as well, which is why she has a lot of support with older Koreans, because they have very fond memories of her father and the economic programs that he instituted to bring South Korea into really the 20th century.
And so now there's some serious things going on over there, especially the outcome affecting the deployment of this missile defense system that the U.S. has sent over, the THAAD system that China is very concerned about. Now, what happens with this situation?
Well, earlier this week, South Korea began deploying the first stages of the THAAD missile defense system. Now, this has been a very contentious issue in South Korea, with the opposition parties taking notice of China's objections and really calling into question, should the deployment of THAAD continue? Now, during the actual impeachment trial, many opposition leaders said that perhaps South Korea could take a look at the decision to deploy THAAD and defer it until the outcome of the Constitutional Court. Now that Park Geun-hye has been impeached, they're saying perhaps we should delay further deployment until the election and a new president is chosen. So right now, acting president Hwang Kyo-an is moving forward with the deployment, but it's unsure to what extent the THAAD missile system will be deployed as a new government takes hold in really 2 months.
And so, of course, you start looking north to mm-hmm. North Korea, and questions are arising that maybe that they might take advantage of the situation right now.
Right. So acting president Hwang Kyo-an addressed the nation, encouraged North Korea to not take any provocative actions. They did raise their alert level in South Korea just in case North Korea does do something. They have seen some increased cyber attacks as of late, so they raised their cyber alert level to take notice and to safeguard their governmental systems.
Well, so the elections are about 60 days away from today.
They have to take place within 60 days.
Within 60 days.
A date has not been set yet.
And what would that be like? I mean, what can we expect between now and then?
Well, you will see a lot of campaigning going on. A number of candidates, mm-hmm. especially Moon Jae-in, who was a former leader of the Minju Party, the main opposition party in South Korea, who actually ran against Park Geun-hye in the last election, has already declared his candidacy. There's a few other candidates. Moon Jae-in is the lead candidate with about 30% or so of the population giving him a positive approval rating. As we move forward, as we move closer to the elections, you will see more candidates declare their desire to be the next president.
And let me ask you, we know what the elections are like here in this country. What are they like in South Korea when candidates go against each other? Can it be as nasty as it is over here?
There is, as you would expect, some mudslinging in various elections. But one of the most interesting things, as someone who lived in South Korea for a number of years, I have found is that each candidate, based on their popularity rating, is given a number. So the first person in a certain category is the number one candidate, and so on down the line. So wherever they're campaigning, they always have these giant number ones, number twos, number threes, and they're also color-coded as well, with large trucks and the candidates and their entourage traveling around South Korea campaigning. It's very interesting to see.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting place to be. And you were there for how long have you been there?
Almost 7 years I lived there.
Okay. VOA Asia in a Minute host Steve Miller. This is International Edition.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
Air pollution takes the lives of more than 500,000 young children every year, according to the World Health Organization. But an entrepreneur in London has come up with a pollution-busting face mask to protect kids from toxic air. Here's Faith Lapidus.
This is a familiar scene in polluted cities like Beijing and Tokyo, where people wear face masks to filter out some of the dangerous particles in the air. It's not so common in London, but it should be. A 2015 study found that nearly 9,500 Londoners die prematurely every year as a result of long-term exposure to air pollution. So Tian Tram's designed doodle masks for kids.
As adults, it affects us, but not as heavily as it was what it does children. And the main reason for that is because their lung development isn't to the point, where it's fully developed like an adult. So they are affected almost, I think, 60 or 70% worse.
The masks come in colorful designs to appeal to kids, like 6-year-old Yusuf, who wears his Star Wars mask on his walk to school. His mother, Selma Abadi, thinks it's important.
You want to prevent your children from taking these, their pollution into their lungs and affecting them, especially like if my son maybe can develop asthma in the future, having me, I'm asthmatic. So, anything to prevent from pollution and trying to reduce them having this bad air to their lungs definitely is that any mom or any parent would do.
Tram says his cotton masks filter out a substantial amount of airborne particles, especially the deadly microscopic particles that belch out of car exhausts.
Did a lot of research into cotton, the types of cotton, the intertwined cotton, different layers of cotton, and how many you really have to have together for it to do something. And the way my masks are made with the two separated layers of cotton and the way that the fabric is woven is actually scientifically proven to reduce between 40 to 60% of these particle intakes.
And until the air clears, that should help everyone breathe a little easier. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News, Washington.
Well, the United Nations says nearly 2 years since the election crisis in Burundi, the country is still at risk of intensifying the crisis. From the UN, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
Speaking to the UN Security Council, the Secretary General's Special Advisor, Jamal Ben-Omar, reported a fragile security environment, soaring unemployment, especially among the youth, and deterioration of the humanitarian situation in Burundi. He also underscored that the political impasse has only deepened in the 2 years since President Pierre Nkurunziza sought what many viewed as an unconstitutional third term in office. Perhaps most troubling is the worsening human rights situation.
Many Burundians live in fear as a result of widespread repression and increasing intimidation by the Imbonerakure, the ruling party's youth militia. Members of opposition political parties, as well as perceived opponents, reportedly continue to be victims of arbitrary arrest, detention, ill-treatment, and enforced disappearance.
Ben-Omar said 3 million Burundians need humanitarian assistance, a quarter of the population. Since the crisis erupted in 2015, nearly 400,000 people have fled the country, and the UN Refugee Agency projects that number will reach 500,000 by the end of the year. In July 2016, the UN Security Council authorized a 228-member international police force to deploy to Burundi to prevent human rights violations and provide stability for an intra-Burundian dialogue. The government has continued to reject the council's decision, and the force has been unable to deploy. Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, who is the facilitator for the opposing sides, told the council via a video link from Entebbe the parties are far apart, despite intensive efforts to bring them together.
Each side claims to be the depository or the custodians of the Arusha Agreement and the Constitution. And the tendency is to see the other side as the criminals, and therefore they are the ones that should be visited with all the wrath of the power of the state or the power of the international community.
Ben-Omar expressed his frustration with the Burundian government, saying the United Nations has tried to engage with Bujumbura, but the doors to engagement and cooperation have been largely shut by the authorities. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. I'm Philip Alexio. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has carried out more than 30 airstrikes in Yemen in recent days against the terrorist group Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. This dangerous terrorist group remains intent on attacking the West, said spokesman Navy Captain Jeff Davis. These counterterrorism strikes were conducted in partnership with the government of Yemen, Davis said, adding U.S. forces will continue to target Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula militants and facilities in order to disrupt the terrorist organization's plots and ultimately to protect American lives. The aim of the strikes is to keep the pressure on the terrorists and deny them access and freedom of movement within traditional safe havens, Davis said. They've taken advantage of ungoverned spaces in Yemen to plot, direct, and inspire terrorist attacks against the United States, he added. Recent actions have targeted militants, equipment, and infrastructure in the governorates of Abyan, Al Baida, and Shabwa, and will degrade the terrorist group's ability to coordinate external terror attacks and limit its ability to use territory seized from Yemen's legitimate government as a safe space for terror plotting, said Captain Davis. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula remains an extremely dangerous Al-Qaeda affiliate and is taking advantage of the chaos in the country from the civil war there, Davis said, noting that the Al-Qaeda organization has more American blood on its hands than the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria does. Davis said Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is a deadly terrorist organization that has proven itself to be very effective in targeting and killing Americans, and they have intent and aspirations to continue doing so. This is a dangerous group locally, regionally, and transnationally, to include against the United States, the West, and our allies, said a defense official speaking on background. We'll continue to work with the government of Yemen and our partners on the ground, said Captain Davis, to defeat al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and deny it the ability to operate.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.